ॐ नमस्ते गणपतये त्वमेव ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Shastra's vision is this, that the whole Jagat is Ishwaraha. The whole Jagat is Bhagavan. Reality is the Bhagavan. Reality being the existence of the Jagat. The whole Jagat is Bhagavan. This is a fact about Bhagavan. This is a fact. This is a concept of Lord with reference to Veda. Whole Jagat is Ishwaraha. We have to remember this example. Water is the existence of the ocean. Therefore, existence of the ocean is dependent on the existence of water. Therefore, existence of water is the existence of the ocean. Therefore, water is the very existence of the ocean. Neere kadalin irupu. Therefore, that reality that is called the existence is known by the term satyam satta sat. The sat, the satyam satta of the ocean is, existence of the ocean is water. And that water is the reality, satyam, existence is satyam, sat is satyam, existence is the reality. And that reality, satyam, the satta, is not the ocean, the H2O is not the ocean, but the ocean is nothing but the water. Similarly here, with reference to the whole Jagat, there is an absolute reality, which is the existence of which is the existence of this universe. Therefore, that reality is the existence of satyam of the Jagat, is the sat of the Jagat. That sat, which is the satyam, the existence, which is the reality of this universe, is not the universe at all, definitely, but this entire cosmos of multifarious beings is nothing but that satyam alone. And who is the Lord here? What is the Lord here with reference to this? We say Jagat is there, reality is there. Reality is Satyam, Jagat is Mithya. Like water is Satyam, the name and form, the ocean is Mithya. Similarly, this whole Jagat is nothing but Nama Rupa, which is Mithya. Satyam is the reality. And here we say, therefore, the Satyam, the reality, is the Lord of the universe. Jagataha Ishaha, Jagataha Ishwaraha, Jagataha, we say Jagadishaha, Jagadnathaha. So this is, the whole Jagat is Ishwaraha. First we say Jagataha Ishwaraha. See, Samudrasya Ishwaraha H2O. First we say Samudrasya Ishwaraha Jalam. Okay? Samudra Ishwara, Samudreshwaraha Jalam. Like Jagataha Ishwaraha reality. Then we say Jagat itself is Ishaha. Look at this. First you have to say Jagataha Ishaha, Lord of the universe. Say no. Lord of the universe is the reality, first we say. Later on we say what? Jagat itself is Ishwaraha. The universe is the Lord. Remember the example now. Ocean, the Lord of the ocean is water. First you say. Then you say the ocean is the Lord. So here also Jagataha Ishaha, first you say the Lord of the universe, we say reality. Then you say the whole universe is the Lord, the reality. But the reality is not the universe. This is a fact about the Lord. This is a fact about the, you know, the concept. This is a fact. This concept is not a view. It is a wish of fact. And this is what is the vision of the Shastra. And we have not yet understood this fact that the whole Jagat is Ishwaraha. But we have faith in the words of the Shastra. Having Shraddha in the words of the Shastra, we also look at, okay, whole Jagat is Ishwaraha. We understand the logic here with the example of ocean, etc. And we say it's whole Jagat is Ishwaraha. Therefore, with this understanding, having the understanding and serving the universe, so doing anything to the universe is what? Serving the service to the universe becomes what? Worship of the Lord. Jagataha Ishadhi Yukta Sevanam No Ashtamurti Brut Deva Pujanam Bhavati. It becomes service to the Lord. This is how any kayakam karma, any physical activity can be converted into worship. That we saw yesterday. Thereafter we saw the oral activity involves twofold aspects. In fact, one is called stavaha, other one is called japaha. And if we repeat many names of the Lord, if we glorify, you know, if we sing lyrics, etc., or shlokas, etc., recite mantras, wherein many Lord glories of the Lord are, you know, sung in using many words, then it is called stavaha. And we have japaha, wherein only one nama or one mantra is repeatedly uttered. So the japaha can be actually uccha japaha or neecha japaha, manda japaha. And Brahma Rishi says very clearly, uccha japaha is better in fact than stavaha. But still, neecha japaha, so when you do the japam softly, which you alone can hear, others cannot hear, that japa is better than even doing the japa loudly. What is much better than that is doing the japaha just mentally without even moving a tongue inside your mouth. That means just the mentally repeating the nama, doing the japam, which is called manasam japaha, which is the best of everything. Why? Because manasam japaha serves as, in fact, meditation. And he says, how manasam japaha helps you? Helps as meditation, because in manasam japaha, you repeat one nama, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya. One mantra when you repeat, and the mantra has a beginning, mantra has an end, again mantra is begin, again mantra ends, again mantra begins, again mantra ends. Therefore, always, every time you say one, repeat the mantra becomes the object of thought there. Therefore, what happens, the mantra, in between the consequent thoughts, there is, definitely, there is no object. The object of meditation in manasam japaha, object of your thought being mantra, and there is no other object is there, attention being held by the mantra, just japa, one mantra, there is no other object is there. Mind is not elsewhere, mind is only in your mantra. This happens by after long practice, not overnight it won't happen. When you start your japa, mantra japa, immediately you won't be able to do japa continuously for a long time, because even if you are chanting it mechanically, sometimes it may become mechanical. The attention may go elsewhere, may get distracted. Again, you bring the attention back to the japam and you practice this japam. As the japam, you practice the japam for a long time, then whenever you sit for meditation, the japa meditation or manasam japaha, what happens? Definitely attention is held just by this mantra. Attention will not be available for anything else. It's a question of deliberate practice. You have to abhyasena tu kaunteya. No, vairagyena cha grihyate. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena cha. You should have some commitment to do this japam regularly, and then abhyasa, practice also. Some commitment and practice will help you to be focused on your, to make this japam, manasam japaha, no, more firm, and it really becomes meditation. Attention can be just held by the mantra alone. Then you can avoid distractions. It will take some time. we start practicing, people come and ask, if they start japa meditation, they start doing manasam japaha. Next day they come and tell, I sat and did some 10 or 12 names, that's all, the 13th time the mind goes somewhere. Mind will go somewhere. Mind should go somewhere, mind will go somewhere. But you have to bring the mind back to practice that. So when you constantly practice, abhyasaha, vairagyam. Commitment to vairagyam here means different one. No, vairagyam means what? If you do not have any passion for so many other things, it is possible to be focused. You know, and it also, if you have some commitment to do this, knowing the value, always knowing the value of what you are doing will help you to be more committed. Commitment is possible only when you know the value. So knowing the value of this japa, why I should do japa, how japa is going to help me, why? Because Shastram says this. That Shraddha in Shastram is very important. Shastram says this, Shastram prescribes this method, prescribes this technique to discipline my mind. So let me do this. Shraddha in, even the trust in what the doctor says is very important for you to accept the medicine wholeheartedly to get cured. So here Shraddha is very important. Okay, Shastram prescribes this technique. So let me do this japa. Japa means the first thing one has to do. Please start from New Year. All of you, even if you are not doing any japa, start from New Year regularly. And then not Uchcha Japaha, not Nicha Japaha, now you can straightway start Manasa Japaha. And start with Japam, and even if mind goes somewhere, you can try to bring it back. So Abhyasaha Vairagyam, commitment and then Abhyasa, practice. Sit and do it again and again and again. Here practice works, not Vedanta cannot be practiced. Japam can be practiced. Okay, so you have to do Japam, then you get it. Such practice, constant practice for a length of time will help you to, you know, to be focused on your mantra. Then what, for such people actually, in fact, in between, you can just be by yourself. Meditation helps you slowly to be by yourself. It's not moksha, it's not jnanam, it's not clarity or anything, but it helps you. It's also mind becomes steady. Slowly. And there we saw afterwards how this Manasam Japaha, which serves as meditation later on, can be actually Manasam Japaha. If the mantra is object of your meditation, it's Manasam Japaha. Otherwise, if you simply can visualize the given form of the Lord also, any given form which is a symbol of the Lord, you can visualize, we can focus your attention on, meet it upon the given form, even that also becomes what? Sometimes you get stuck with that form. That's why you have to be very careful in such meditations. But what we say, that in that meditation, the interruption means whenever, as you sit and try to focus attention on the given object, after a few minutes, after a few seconds, the mind may start wandering. Mind may go somewhere, and that is that. If whenever the mind goes back, you brings it back, goes out, it brings it back, you bring it back, then that meditation is actually meditation with a lot of interference, lot of interruptions. So such interrupted meditation is called virala chintanam, but Ramana Maharshi says, better by practice, constant practice, convert that virala chintanam into sarala chintanam. Interruption-free meditation. That means when you sit for meditation, either it is manasa japaha, or you focus attention on some other given object which stands for Bhagavan, then that meditation should be interruption-free meditation. It will become sarala chintanam. As I told you already, abhyasaha vairagyam, commitment to do the meditation again here it is now commitment again, you don't force yourself to hear with the no value of meditation. See, what am I doing this for? It will help you to have that liking for the object, and once liking for the object will help you to be attracted towards the object, and that will help you to be focused upon the object. Therefore, he used the word that ajya dharaya srotasa samam. No, it must be effortless. Meditation must be effortless, and it also must be, it must be, you know, like the flow of ghee into the Agni Kunda during the performance of fire ritual. How the ghee flows, like one straight line, the ghee will be flowing without any, you know, obstruction, without any break. Similarly, this thought flow also must be in meditation. But just without any interruption, you must be able to be with the object of meditation. And that is possible if you know the value of the object of meditation. And if the value of object of meditation is very clear, it is natural for you to have love for the object of meditation. And having love for the object of meditation will keep you attracted toward object of meditation. Being attracted toward object of meditation will help you to be focused on that meditation. That means you get stuck with the attention, can get stuck with the object of meditation. Means what? You won't be distracted. Attention being stuck with the object of meditation means not getting stuck actually, you will not be distracted. Understand now? How to avoid distraction? If the distraction is not there, your meditation will be like what? Like meditation will be like Ajyadhara, like the constant, continuous, unbroken flow of line of, no, the flow of ghee into the Agni Kunda. It will be like effortless flow of water in the river. Therefore, he says, Ajyadharaya Surtasa Samam, no, Sarala Chintanam Viralataha Param. This is unbroken, uninterrupted meditation is better than, in fact, interrupted, you know, meditation. So he explained that. Then he said, even in this meditation, there is meditation means this object of meditation, even though it stands for Bhagavan, it is not the Swarupam of Bhagavan. It is not the Swarupam, it is not the very reality. It is still only object of meditation, and wherein the meditator and meditated bhedaha is there, the difference is there. As long as difference is there, still dhacha meditation can help you only have steadiness. What you can accomplish ultimately by constantly practicing some meditation, wherein the meditator is different from the object of meditation, the object of meditation is different from the meditated, what can you achieve by practicing such meditation? Only mental steadiness. Nothing more than that. But this, in fact, is only to steady the mind. Initially, it's okay. But this meditation should always be converted into what? Contemplation. What is contemplation? Contemplation also is manasam karma. As I told you, saguna brahma vishaya manasa vyaparaha is meditation, and nirguna brahma vishaya manasa vyaparaha is contemplation, wherein the object of meditation is the very reality, not an object which stands for Bhagavan, but the very Bhagavan. When you say very Bhagavan, who again Bhagavan? Very Swarupam of Bhagavan. Swarupam of Bhagavan means what? The very nature of the reality. Nature of the reality means what? Very reality. Why is the nature of the reality and reality? Because reality itself, you understand in terms of its Swarupam. You recognize what is the Swarupam of the reality, how the reality is, then you understand this reality, then you try to focus attention on that reality, and the very nature of reality. That reality happens to be the very truth of the mind, the meditator, very existence of the very I. There is no distance between the meditator and the meditated. Dhyanikkira manadirkum, dhyanikkappaduhindra parambarulukkum, idaiveli illai. There is no distance between the meditating mind and the meditated reality. Because the reality, the swarupam on which the attention of the mind is focused, that reality is the very existence of the very mind. Isn't it? There was no distance. That is called, actually, that is why that reality, it has no guna. Attributelessness is swarupam of the reality. That is why nirguna brahma vishya manasa vyaparaha. And that is the contemplation, and contemplation is the meditation. Any okay, other meditation is only pre-preparation for meditation. Okay, that's why contemplation implies one already having done shravanam. Okay, one having done mananam. At least shravanam, at least one must have done already. Then the mananam and sannidhyasanam will go hand in hand. Actually, one must have done shravanam, and one must also know. Then nidhyasanam, the contemplation is possible. Contemplation is the meditation. And this contemplation will result in what? He says, why contemplation is important, not the meditation. Meditation will result only in mental steadiness, but contemplation will result in having the ascertained doubt-free vision of the non-duality of the reality. The more and more and more attention of the mind is focused on the very reality, the more mind will remain absorbed in the vision of the non-duality of the reality. The more the mind remains absorbed in the vision of the non-duality of the reality or the oneness of reality, now, and then it will remain absorbed in the vision of that oneness of reality forever. It can, because it's a fact. That is the natural thing. It means whatever you do, still in your mind, the clarity is such, there's no doubt at all. Even you see the plurality outside, you see the duality outside, you see all the transactions outside, everything will be as it is going on, but in your buddhi, you have no doubt about the reality being non-dual. And you have no doubt about everything being the only reality. This vision is in this vision. Why should I have this vision? Hey, only in this vision, your problems all will be resolved. So the contemplation alone will bless you with this vision of this non-duality of the reality. In contemplation alone, your mind will abide, your mind will remain absorbed in this vision of the non-duality of the reality or oneness of reality, wherein you resolve the whole jagat. Resolving means what? Not physically. Cognitively you resolve the whole jagat in that reality. The whole jagat means you resolve mainly your own I-sense. Yesterday I told you, cognitively you shift the I-sense from body mind's complex, the anatma, and you resolve the I-sense in awareness. When I-sense is resolved, then naturally, then the other problems caused by, you know, the self-ignorance, adhyasa, adhyaropa, ahankara, all the erroneous notions about the self will be resolved for good, effortlessly. You need not undo your give up your ahankara, undo anything. All the notions, wrong notions you have about the self, helplessly you had about the self, will be resolved in that vision. In fact, that vision is in fact that vision of fullness. Such a vision is vision of fullness. Vision of having the vision of fullness is reveling in fullness. And reveling in fullness implies, you know, you are not being dependent on anything external for your being full and for your happiness. That is when naturally you will be a loving person. That is the only way you are not dependent on the external world for your happiness or well-being or your fullness, then there is only expression of fullness, which is love. So that is the abiding of the mind in that vision of non-duality of the reality. That is what is jivan mukti. There is no other jivan mukti. There is no other mukti. That is freedom while living. If you are, see, not being dependent on anything external, a situation or people or things or for anything, for one's well-being, one's happiness, one's fullness is in fact freedom from emotional dependence, which is Jivan Muktihi. That Jivan Mukti is the, there's nothing, no other great accomplishment. So that Mukti is when, only when your mind abides in, remains absorbed in this ascertained vision of the non-duality of the reality. How do you get it? Through this means of contemplation, and which is said to be the greatest of devotion, in fact, the great devotion. Uttama Bhaktihi. That is the culmination of devotion, is the great devotion. Jnana, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Jnana Bhaktihi. Jigyasabhya, the Jigyasu Bhaktaha, Jnani Bhaktaha, and Artha Bhaktaha, Arthi Bhaktaha. Krishna talks about four types of devotees. The Artha Bhaktaha is the one who worships Bhagavan only when he is in distress, only when he is in troubles. When he is okay, he doesn't forget about Bhagavan. He is Artha Bhaktaha. And then Arthi Bhaktaha is the one who worships Bhagavan. Always he seeks Bhagavan's help for Artha Kamas, for security and pleasures. He somewhere, some fear is there, very insecure. If I don't worship, I won't get Artha Kamas. Therefore, he seeks Bhagavan's help and support and grace for Artha Kamas. Actually, a person is Arthi Bhaktaha. He is also Bhakta. These two people are simple religious people. Whereas Jigyas Bhakta is the spiritual person, one who is a thinker, one who knows the value, one who has Purusharth Nischaya, one who knows the value of knowledge, one who is committed to the pursuit of knowledge, one who wants to know what the reality is, who Bhagavan is, why these difficulties are. One who started thinking is a Jigyas Bhakta, is a real devotee. And the best of the devotees is the one who knows who Bhagavan is, what the reality is, one who sees all that is there is only Ishvara. One who has ascertained this fact of Bhagavan being the whole being Bhagavan. Jignas Bhakta, Jnani Bhakta. The same thing Amarshi says here, Uttama Bhaktihi means what? What is said in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna as Jnani Bhakta? He says here, the one whose mind remains absorbed in this vision of the non-duality of the reality, you know, wherein he has got all his own mind, ahankara, everything resolved. I say everything resolved in that reality. Where he says everything as the only Bhagavan, and such a person is in fact, having that mind is what? Even Uttama Bhakti is a culmination of devotion. He said in the other verse. Thereafter we saw, in fact, there's an explanation. He talks about, okay, all these things we have in Shastram, like what? Bodha, knowledge. You know, you have self-enquiry, at last you gain jnanam. So here, this knowledge, okay, Shastra study, Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, and enquiry into the meaning of the word I, and then having the vision of the reality, this knowledge is for what? Then yogaha. Yogaha, when you say, so you can say bhakti, yogaha together, you can say bhakti. Bhakti is in fact karma yoga. Bhakti is not something separate. Bhakti itself is karma yogaha. Why devotion? Why should I live a life of karma yoga? Why should I be committed to the pursuit of, why should I be committed to live a life of dharma? Why should there be isharpana buddhi? How we should be able to take everything as prasada? Why this living a life of karma yoga is ultimately for what? Karma yoga, living a life of karma yoga, and this enquiry, this study, and also we can say, all other activities we do, all the kriyas, and also yoga, you can say yogaha, karma yogaha. And also if you say, there's something called yoga shastram. Yoga shastram separately we have. Yoga shastram, actually, it is the authored by Patanjali Rishi. Patanjali Rishi, and when he prescribes ashtanga yogaha, I mean eightfold limbs of yoga. In fact, yogaha itself means any discipline you practice in order to prepare your mind for jnanam. That discipline is called yoga. Any discipline practiced, which will result in preparing the mind for jnanam, is called yoga. According to Vedanta Shastra. So here these eightfold disciplines are prescribed by Patanjali Rishi in Ashtanga Yoga. So Ashtanga Yoga. So these disciplines practice should result in one objective, which is called Angi. Angaha, eightfold disciplines. Ultimately to accomplish one objective, that is Angi. Isn't it? So eightfold disciplines. You know, the practice of Ashtanga Yoga. So those who are committed to the practice of the Ashtanga Yoga are called yoginaha, yogis. Leave on karma yogi. Okay, here those who are committed to practice this Ashtanga Yoga, they are called yogis. So Ashtanga Yoga also we have, and the practice of Ashtanga Yoga also, the eightfold limbs, eightfold disciplines also, not to prepare the mind for jnanam or to attain some samadhi, all these things are ultimately for what? So one verse yesterday we saw, nischitam, nischitam means it is definitely, you know, revealed by Shruti that all these things are performance of the various karmas, living a life of karma yoga and practice of these eightfold disciplines which prepare, contribute for the mental preparation for jnanam. And also this Shastra study, Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, you know, self-enquiry and knowledge, all these things culminate in only one thing. Now what is that one thing? Mind abiding in its own Swarupam. Hritsthale swastustutihi. The mind has to abide in its own Swarupam. In fact, mind always abides in its Swarupam. Mind always is in its own Swarupam. Like wave is always in H2O. Wave is never away from H2O. Wash is never away from H2O. Mind is always in reality, the awareness only. But mind abiding in its Swarupam means what? Without knowing its Swarupam being H2O, when the wave always abides in H2O, but without knowing Swarupam being H2O, when the wave is there, it is as though away from H2O. When the wave recognizes its Swarupam being H2O, then it is as though it is with H2O. As though it is away from. What is that which distances the wave from H2O? What is it which distances from, which in fact removes the distance between wave and H2O. In fact, there's no distance. There is distance between wave and H2O. The distance is only ignorance. The distancelessness is brought about by knowledge. Isn't it? Is what is mind? When is mind away from the reality, the awareness? Paramburidamirindu manam yappaladu dooramagirikkirudunna. Never is the mind away from the reality. Mind always abides in reality. But as though it doesn't, as though it is not. Why? Because of ignorance. Therefore, in jnanam, having recognized Swarupam or the reality, being pure knowledge, through Shravana Mananam, and thereafter by constant self-enquiry, then by focus attention on that nature of the reality which you have discovered, which you have understood, and constantly remaining in constant contemplation, through contemplation, with the means of contemplation, when you ascertain the vision of that oneness of non-duality of the reality, the mind abides in reality. Mind abiding in reality means what? Mind always abides in reality, never away from reality. But it's as though it abides, mind remaining with its own Swarupam. Understand now? Mind remaining with its own Swarupam. I want to tell you one beautiful thing here. In Tamil Nadu, I don't know about North India, in Tamil Nadu, we have many ancient Shiva temples. Many, many huge temples are there. And then in all Shiva temples, every day in evenings, there's some special puja, last puja of the day. In the beginning morning, we have Suprabhatam and then, so many pujas are there. The last puja of the day is called Palliyarai Sevai. In Sanskritam, we call it Ekanta Seva. Vishnu temple, we do Ekanta Seva. In Shiva temple, we have Pallyara Puja. And that, I told, no, whether I mentioned in this class earlier, I did not know. And then last, if you go at 9 o'clock, and before they close the temples, you had to go at 9 o'clock. Sometimes you go, and the last bit, last time, they'll keep hot milk with sugar. First prasad, naivedyam, it's very tasty. What they give, one spoon, will be very, very tasty. Come and drink one tumbler also, it won't be tasty like that. And they'll offer that naivedyam. You know what they do? They take the Devi, you know, the Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva's Utsavamurti. Utsavamurti means the one which is taken out from the Garbhagriham, the Sanctum Sanctorum. The small murti, which will be kept along with the big murti, Shivalingam, that murti alone will be taken out, you know, taken out from the Sanctum Sanctorum. That murti will be taken to the Devi's place. There will be Devi separately. They will be in other room, other Sanctum Sanctorum. And Shiva will be other Sanctum Sanctorum. And there, Devi doesn't come. Shiva goes there. Shiva is taken from that place to Devi's place. And there will be small, you know, swing. And they'll put nice, comfort, nice, beautiful mattress and all that. And they'll put the Shiva with Devi. And they'll do arati. They'll offer sweet milk. They close the door. Now, what does it mean? The mind abiding in its swarupam. Shiva goes means what? The reality reveals to the mind. The mind is Devi. And reality is this Shiva. Shiva reveals its swarupam to the mind going there. And there, what happens? Mind abides one with Shiva. The same thing we have in Bhashimad Bhagavatam, the Rasa Leela. You know, Rasa Leela means Rase Leenaha. In fact, all these devis are abide in this vision of the non-duality of reality, which is Krishna. For everything, everybody, only Krishna is there. Rase Leenaha Bhavanti. Rasaha is meant, Rasaha means essence. Rasaha Saraha means the essence. The Satyam, Sat. So the mind discovering, recognizing its own swarupam, and there that swarupam is what? The swarupam of the whole jagat. That mind abiding is what? In fact, Rasa Leela. Every gopi is a mind and Rasaha is Krishna. Krishna stands for Rasa, the essence. So, what I'm saying here, this vision actually, this contemplation helps you to have this vision. Okay, so mind abiding in the vision of, remaining absorbed in this vision of the non-duality of the reality is possible only through contemplation. Constantly, consistently, continuously, being able to focus attention on the nature of the reality. After having understood the reality, it is possible. And that nididhyasanam is possible if you have a steady mind. The unsteady minded, how can they contemplate on? That's why it's very important for one to have a steady mind to be able to contemplate. You should know the nature of reality, you should be able to focus attention also. Okay? Then that is possible. So that is where one resolves the ahankara. In fact, resolving one's ahankara is very, very important, because only in resolving ahankara your freedom lies. The freedom that is sought after by you, now the moksha is sought after by you, the fullness, the happiness, the contentment, the absolute satisfaction that is choicelessly sought after by you is in having this ahankara resolved. How are you going to deal with this ahankara? You cannot destroy it. You cannot give it up. I tell you, if we all can give up ahankara easily, then it is very easy. We all want to throw it away. Like how you all throw away your unwanted old stuff, you know? we will throw it in the bin easily, but we cannot do that. We are helpless. We have to handle, we have to deal with this ahankara. As long as ahankara is there, our dissatisfaction, our discontent, discontentment, and then these problems, the unhappiness, sorrow, the emotional problems, and then leaning and dependence, and now hurt and guilt, all this we cannot help. You are helpless. Not that you want to get hurt, not that you want to hurt, not that you want to be guilty, not that you want to, understand now, you want to upset people, you want to get upset, nothing, you don't you want to do anything. Naturally they are happening. And all these problems are because of your unresolved ahankara. Okay? The ahankara only. And ahankara, you are helpless. Why do you have ahankara? And you want to have ahankara. Your ahankara is there, part of you. Ahankara is very much there. Just the notion in the form of thought which you have about the self. And this notion, this ahankara has to be resolved. It cannot be destroyed, but it has to be resolved. Understand now? That this resolution of ahankara or moksha is in resolving the ahankara. The freedom from ahankara, being free from the wrong notion you have about the self, is in freedom in fact. The ahankara, how are you going to resolve it? It's a big problem. It's an emotional problem. Like headache is a problem, you can't cut the head and throw away, Swamiji says. You had to, similarly, but you had to get rid of the headache. Similarly, ahankara, you can't undo it, but you had to handle, deal with that. It has to be resolved. Ahankara resolution is possible, is naturally ahankara will resolve without being driven away by you. You cannot undo it, ahankara by itself will resolve. Ahankara will give you up. No way. It will resolve by itself. When, along with Adhyasa, Kundod Kailasam, together it will go. Ahankara will go along with Adhyaropa, Adhyasa, Ajnanam. Okay? What Ajnanam? Sthita Prajna, Sthira Jnanam, Dridha Jnanam, Sandeha Rahita, Samshaya Rahita, Sthita Prajna, Dridha Jnanam, firm, assertive, doubt-free, ascertained vision of the non-duality of the reality. Okay? And wherein the mind abides in that such vision of reality. How can it resolve? Only where it recognizes the reality. The mind recognizes its own swarupam. It's like your eyes seeing themselves in the mirror. I see themselves in the mirror, and this mind has to recognize its own swarupam through the words of Shastram. It has to see, recognize, and does dwell upon, it has to abide there. In that vision of reality, in fact, everything resolves. And this is what is abiding. Mind abiding in the vision of non-duality of reality. This is what is Hritsthale. No, swasthata. Swasthata, I told you, in Sanskritam is a beautiful word, swasthyam. See, in Sanskritam, to mean somebody is healthy, healthy person, he is very healthy. How to say that? Swasthaha purushaha. Swastha mahila. Swasthaha means healthy. Swasthaha. Healthy, one word is swasthaha. Swastha is also a feminine gender word. And health, noun is what? Swasthyam. Swasthyam is health. You're all doctors, you know better, remember better. Swasthaha, swasthyam, health. You know what is tishtati? Stha means to be. This is the root for the verb tishtati. Swa, sthane, tishtati. Okay? Being at home. Remaining, being one's own self. Not being anything else is what? Being healthy. Being oneself, one's own self, is being healthy. Look at this. Being one's own self is being healthy. When you know who you are, when you know, not even who you are, when you know what is I is, what the Swarupam is, what the truth of the mind is, then you, when you resolve your I sense in reality, shifting it from the anatma, then you are yourself. When you do not know what the self is, what this I is, what the I, the content of I is, when you do not know, when your I sense is placed, I sense is naturally there in body, and the body mind is complex, then Dehatma Buddhi, when you have, you are not yourself. Understand now? When you mistake the non-self for the self, you are not yourself. When you know what you are, what the self is, then you are yourself. So being yourself is being healthy. Understand? Having I sense in non-self is what? It's being sick, being abnormal. So being sick actually, that is sick. So what is perfectly healthy? So swasthata, swasthata. So being at home means mind recognizing its own swarupam and remain abiding there. Its own swarupam is what? In fact, abiding in the vision of the non-duality of the reality, which is the culmination of all this practicing, this all this disciplines, the performance of rituals, performance of activities, other actions, and living life karma yoga, and also this pursuit of studies, and all these things, the practice of these disciplines, everything is ultimately for this vision. This is the culmination of this. And this is the real accomplishment which makes a human life a meaningful and complete, a successful life. This is really a real accomplishment. There is no greater other accomplishment. So here I want to tell you one thing. Yesterday I came to this pranayama thing. So having discussed this much, he is going to go back to the how to arrive at the reality, etc. He'll talk about later on. In the process, we saw how pranayama, the practice of this breathing exercise, helps one to calm or make the mind serene and tranquil. We just told a little bit. In this context, I want to tell you one thing. See, this Ashtanga Yogaha, you have to know this. Ashtanga Yogaha means these eightfold limbs. The practice. Yogaha itself means any discipline practiced to prepare the mind for jnanam is called Yogaha. There is only one thing. So asanas alone are not the yoga. People say yoga asanam, they say. So here we have eightfold disciplines, and wait to see what are they. Just for our understanding, we need to know this. First, we have in Vedanta, we have learnt what shamaha. Remember shamaha? Shamaha means what? Shamaha means having mastery over one's ways of thinking, having mastery over one's mind. Having mastery over one's mind is possible only when you are committed to live a life of values. That means you use your willpower, and you make the best use of your willpower, and you use your knowledge of values, and always try to, always with discretion, choose to do the right actions, avoid the wrong actions. This is called having mastery over mind, which is shamaha. This is a discipline. This shamaha alone is said here in Ashtanga Yoga as yama and niyama. Shama otherwise is called yama and niyama. Shamaha is a word used in as a discipline used in the Vedanta Shastra. Yama and Niyama are used as two disciplines used in Yoga Shastra. Is it clear now? So what is Yamaha and what is Niyamaha? Yamaha means avoidance of things which should not be done, which are prohibited. Avoiding the prohibited actions. Avoidance of the prohibited activities is what called yamaha. Not doing deliberately. Refraining from what should not be done is called yamaha. Then what is niyamaha? Niyamaha means deliberately doing what should be done. Understand? That again, as I said, that is shamaha. We use the word shamaha there. That means your actions do not go by your likes and dislikes. Your actions go by your knowledge of right and wrong. Your knowledge of dharma. Therefore, yamaha and niyamaha, we can say, implies actually the disciplines to be followed for one to be ethical. Yamaha and niyamaha. Yama and niyama. So, yamaha, niyamaha, then we have, pratyaharaha. Yama, niyama, asanam. The third one is asanam. Asanam, because here it is very popular known as yoga asanam. Asanam means a seat. Asanam is a seat. It's a posture. So there's a term, varieties of, lots of, number of postures, and then how one should be. There's a method how one has to learn and practice it also. And this practicing these are like physical exercises. They're not mere exercise, there's more than their exercise. And these, practicing these physical postures are called asanam, asanani. You know what yoga asanani we call them? That also helps one to have the fit. It blesses one with the fit body, and also it helps to some extent also to have some healthy mind. Healthy mind in the sense, it also sort of, it holds attention. Yogasana also you can't practice mechanically like this. Sometimes when you practice seriously all the proper postures, you have to place your mind there. So it's a discipline by itself. So yoga asanam, it helps you to have, in fact, some sort of mind also is mental cleanliness also. It's a physical body also. It contributes for physical health also. So this is yoga asanam, yoga asanam. So yamaha niyamaha asanani. Yama niyama asana, then pranayamaha. The fourth discipline was pranayama, which you saw yesterday as the one of the techniques. Ramana Maharshi uses only pranayama, mentions pranayama. Doesn't mention other things. Because in karma yoga itself, when Vedanta Shastram talks about living a life of karma yoga, yamaha, niyamaha, these two are highly emphasized in the form of shamaha. Also dhamma we'll see. So here, this is the fourth discipline, what? Pranayamaha. So prananam ayamaha. Ayamaha means exercise, and prana ayamaha means what? Exercising your pranas. So regulating the pranas. The prana, the physiological functions being involuntary functions, they're mainly the prana, the function of respiration alone is taken here as for pranayama, and you can either simply observe the prana without interfering. Simply observing, we don't even give attention to prana in regular day-to-day breathing. We don't even give attention to the prana. Without our attention being given to it, it's all right, the respirations are constantly, all the functions are happening. But only for respiration, if you give your attention and just observe the inhalation and exhalation, which itself is called prana vikasanam. So prana vikasaha or prana vikasanam means simply without any involvement, interference, just observing the prana. You observe how you're inhaling, how you're exhaling. This is called prana vikasaha or prana vikasanam. And this itself, in fact, makes your mind sort of, it quiets your mind. It quietens your mind. This itself calms your mind. Prana, observing prana. Prana darshanam. Simply observing prana itself helps you to calm the mind. But sometimes if it is not enough, and you can also, you do the pranayamaha, which Ramana Maharshi calls it as vayurodhanam. Vayurodhanam, because you use your will there, and then you also try to what? You inhale consciously and hold the breath for length of time. Again, exhale consciously and hold the breath again. Therefore, again, some involvement is here. It's called pranayamaha. Again, so many techniques are involved in this pranayamaha. So pranayamaha, as I told, explained to you, this pranayama definitely helps one to calm the mind. Why? In fact, instead of asking why here, people found out whenever you get scared, you are frightened, you are excited, or you are confused, or something bothers your mind, you can see the breathing will be much faster. When you're worried about something, also breathing will be much faster. Whenever, especially when there's fear, some sort of insecure feeling is there, the breathing will be much faster. So they found out why whenever the mind is disturbed, the flow of breath is also disturbed. There's some connection why it happens. That is all they analyzed, and they found out because they are interconnected. Prana, the physiological function, which is an expression of, in fact, the rajasic, rajogunaha, and the manaha is expression of the sattva-gunaha. No, they are interconnected. What are these two gunas? Two gunas are not, you can't see the gunas. Two gunas are two expressions of twofold powers. The twofold powers which are inherent in absolute power. So this mind is the power of knowing and the power of activity, the kriya shaktihi and jnana shaktihi. In fact, together are what? Icha shakti and jnana shakti together, you can say, sattva manifestation of sattva guna. And kriya shakti is manifestation of rajo guna. These powers are what? They're all the manifestation, subtle manifestations of the subtlest unmanifest power. Understand now these two. Therefore, the unmanifest power is what? Unmanifest power is the matter. Unmanifest power is the matter in its subtlest form. And that is one power. The only one subtlest matter alone, these twofold inherent powers manifest as two different, functions. This function of mentation and function of this breathing, the kriya shakti and jnana shakti, both shaktis are from one shakti. Therefore, because they are manifest, both are matter in nature, material in nature, the one is subtler than the other. Mind, the power of knowing is subtler than the power of activity, in fact, even though they come from the same power. That's all. We can't even differentiate how subtler one is than the other. We can't even differentiate. That's the only reason they're interconnected. Therefore, one has say over the other means what? If you really regulate your pranas, mind also becomes calmer. When the mind is calm, your pranas are also regulated. They contribute mutually for regulating each other. Understand now? That's why meditation helps you to have. That's why meditation, people say when you practice meditation, try to discipline the mind, it regulates your breathing system. That is why the pressure is taken care of. When you practice pranayama, regulate your breathing system, mind becomes calm. Mutually they contribute for regulating each other. This is the reason. So here we say pranayamaha is the fourth discipline. So yamaha, niyamaha, asanani, then pranayamaha. Okay, just quieten the mind. And it also contributes for physical well-being to some extent. It can't undo the paratha, but helps one to be physically also healthy. Because it cleanses the system. It cleanses the lungs, etc. So it cleanses the system. And pranayamaha, pratyaharaha. Yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyaharaha. Pratyaharaha in Vedanta we can say Damaha. Shamaha, now we can say Damaha. There we call Damaha. Damaha means what? Having mastery over one's sense organs, powers of organs of actions. Organs of actions and sense powers. What do we mean by having mastery over senses and organs of actions? In fact, So being conscious of how much the senses are used, not over-indulging, avoiding the abuse of senses and the overindulgence, sense objects, etc., is called pratyaharaha. So pratyaharaha is called damaha in Vedanta Shastra. And also this pranayama, pratyaharaha, and we say yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyaharaha, then dharanam. See, dharanam itself means from dhru dhatuhu, dharati, dharayati is the verb, and dharanam means holding. Holding means what here? In this context, dharanam means simply anything, holding anything is called dharanam only. But here dharanam means holding the attention of the mind. Holding the attention of the mind means what? Placing the attention of the mind. The attention of the mind is goes here and there, and then you try to place the attention of the mind on a given object of meditation. Now you want to practice meditation, you want to start meditation, and you have to start placing, first you have to, you want to keep on focusing your attention of the mind on a given object means, first you have to place attention on a given object. You have chosen a given object of meditation. Okay, Om Namah Shivaya mantra, or Om Namo Narayanaya mantra, or some form, or Om. Something you have chosen. And you had to place, so you try to place attention of the mind. So taking the attention of the mind from everywhere, and focusing your attention of the mind on a given object, itself, first placing, holding attention of the mind on a given object, taking it away from everywhere is what? Dharanam. That itself needs some practice, know that. Dharanam itself is one of the disciplines. Mind goes here and there. First, okay, bring it and then think. Make you first think of this. Trying to place the attention of the mind on a given object of meditation is called dharanam. Very slight difference. Understand between dhyanam and dharanam. First you place, first you focus your attention. And once you start, once you focus attention, place your attention on the given object of meditation, and you try to continue to place attention of mind on a given object continuously, okay, for length of time, then it is meditation. Dhyanam. Okay, dharanam always precedes dhyanam. Dhyanam itself means avadhanam. Focus. Being focused is dhyanam, isn't it? So take attention. And in dhyanam, that's why in dharanam only, first, whenever the mind, the interrupted meditation is there, then you have dharanam. And uninterrupted meditation is there, dhyanam. Is it clear now? When you try to focus, mind goes. You bring it back, again place attention of the mind on that object of meditation. Therefore, in interrupted meditation, what you have is dharanam. You try to have dharanam. Practice dharanam. Goes, comes, brings it back. Once you are able to focus without any interruption, every time you sit for meditation, you are able to be focused on a given object of meditation for length of time without any distraction, disturbance and interruption, it is called dhyanam. And then, if you are able to focus attention on given object for length of time and is constant, continuous, deliberate, consistent practice for long time, for years and for months and years of time, I tell you, then you are a yogi. Okay? The people who call them, you practice, 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 practice. Meditation, in fact, is a big kick. Know that? Because every time you sit in meditation, and if you can, you're successful in your meditation and you're able to focus, you sit means the immediately attention comes from everything else. Attention goes to your object of meditation. You just sit in meditation. It is possible after long time practice. One has to practice for a long time to have such meditative disposition. You sit means immediately mind just naturally, automatically mind will be taken from other objects. And mind can be focused on this object of meditation. Your object of meditation will be readily available there, it focuses. and mind sits with that object. Attention of the mind is with that object. Now, when a person practices meditation for a long time, then in the long run, what will that meditation do? So, in such meditation, for serious meditation, in fact, will result in having all the thoughts resolved. There will be a time in whenever a person sits in meditation, all the thoughts will be resolved. All the thoughts will be resolved means what? Because attention of the mind is available for any other object, thoughts can be there. The attention of the mind is not available for any other object. Only one object is holding the attention. Isn't it? That means, so thoughts cannot arise. It's a simple thing. Why thoughts do not arise? This is a knack. This is a trick. I tell you, having the thoughts resolved means the non-rising of the thoughts. The thoughts are not allowed to rise. Thoughts are prevented from rising. How the thoughts remain resolved? What is the trick here? The thoughts are resolved means attention is not available for any other object. No object can distract and drag the attention from this object of meditation to something else. No object can distract and drag. That means what? Attention is only with one object. Therefore what? No object is object can distract the attention. No object is perceived, no object is focused, other object is focused, therefore, no thoughts rise. Thoughts do not rise at all. All the thoughts will be resolved. Then what will happen? There is only object of meditation and the meditator. And in that, this is an experience, okay? The meditator, such a serious meditator, in due course of time will have such experience. This experience is called actually Savikalpa Samadhi. In Savikalpa Samadhi, the constant practice of meditation will bless one with Savikalpa Samadhi. The Savikalpa Samadhi means one will have a dual experience. What is a dual experience? Dual experience means no thoughts will be there. The object of meditation alone will be there. The meditator alone will be there. Meditator, the object of meditation. Only two things are there. The meditator is there. Object of meditation is there. Nothing else is there. You have to understand this. You have to remember your sleep. In deep sleep state, no thought is there. See what happens? In deep, please listen to me carefully. In deep sleep state, what happens? There's no thought. No thought. There's no object. In fact, there's no meditator also. There's no knower. Listen now. Knower is there. I mean, even the I sense is not there. The knowledge I am is not there. No thought is a completely blank. No thought is there. Whereas in this Savikalpa Samadhi, the knowledge that you are is. In deep sleep state, you do not know you are. In Savikalpa Samadhi, you know you are. In deep sleep state, no other object is there. Nothing is there. You do not know you are, no other object also is there. You do not know that the world is. In Savikalpa Samadhi, you know you are, but no other object is there. The object of meditation alone is there. The meditator and the object of meditation alone is there. The no other thought is there. There is a stillness of mind. There is all the thoughts are resolved except only one thought. What is one thought? The object, the thought, okay? Thought of the object and the meditator. It's called dual experience. It's also experience. Okay, this dual experience, Savikalpa Samadhi, one will have dual experience. When I say experience, any experience should come to an end. Understand? No experience will be everlasting. All experiences happen in the reality. Any experience is what? Time bound, because it begins at one point. That experience was not there before one sits for meditation. So experience has there's a beginning. Like does a deep sleep state is an experience. It begins after you fall asleep. That way it comes to an end. Dream experience begins at one point, it ends at one point. Waking also begins when you wake up, when you fall asleep, it goes. Understand now? So any experience, any sukham, dukkham, any experience has a beginning, therefore it has to end. It will end. So what about the dual experience, not having anything? Oh, that itself is such a joy for people, you know, the big kick. Why? Because no pain, no pleasure, no smallness, nothing, temporary. Understand? Temporary sukham is there. The time-bound sukham is there. Nothing is there. Just you are the object of meditation alone is there. It's called Savikalpa Samadhi. The dual experience. It's also experience. So what? Very nice to have experience. But because it is experience, it has to end. If it is there all the time, it is sukham, isn't it? Like sleep. Even sleep will be nice if you don't wake up at all. Don't you think so? Deep sleep state, you don't wake up at all, very nice, no? How do I want to eat something and then again fall asleep? That is the problem, isn't it? Like Savikalpa Samadhi experience, it will come to an end. So at one point you'll be disturbed. Like sleep experience, deep sleep state as an experience comes to an end. This also comes to an end. Understand? The dual experience also comes to an end. But this is Savikalpa Samadhi. These are the eightfold, understand now, Samadhi. So, Yama, Niyama, Yamaha, Niyamaha, Asanam, Pranayamaha, Pratyaharaha, then Dharanam, Dhyanam, Samadhi. Savikalpa Samadhi. These are the eightfold limbs of the Yoga Shastra. And these eightfold limbs, practicing these limbs, all of them or some of them, somehow, you can skip one or two if you want, but not Yamana Yama. Okay. But even Yoga Shastra emphasizes the disciplines of not going against Dharma. Any Shastra, all our Indian Shastras emphasis Dharma. Isn't it? So these eightfold disciplines, what should we ultimately accomplish? Even the Savikalpa Samadhi also, through that what is the aim, objective of practicing these eightfold disciplines? We're practicing Yamaha, Niyamaha, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Asanam, Dharanam, Dhyanam, then Samadhi, by having experiencing Samadhi also, what do you want to accomplish ultimately? That is Nirvikalpa Samadhi. So Nirvikalpa Samadhi is the Angi, the actual objective of practicing these eightfold disciplines. For yogis, okay? For Vedantins, Nirvikalpa Samadhi is not the ultimate end. Understand now? So what is Nirvikalpa Samadhi? So the same Samadhi, the Savikalpa Samadhi, the person who has Savikalpa Samadhi experience through constant practice, when he further practices, even that one object of meditation, the object of meditation, in Savikalpa Samadhi, he has all the thoughts resolved, the experiencer is there, the object of experience, only one object is there, there's a dual experience. What happens, the further constant practice of remaining in Samadhi for length of time, again trying to be more in Samadhi, having that experience of dual experience, in fact, will help one slowly resolve that object of meditation also. In Nirvikalpa Samadhi, the object of meditation also will resolve. That thought also will not be there. Understand? The mediator alone will be there. So in Nirvikalpa Samadhi and Savikalpa Samadhi, what is the difference? In Savikalpa Samadhi, object of meditation alone is there. In Nirvikalpa Samadhi, object of meditation also will be resolved. That means what? Even that object upon which your attention was focused, that object also will be resolved. That thought also will be resolved. There is no thought. The experiencer, the alone is there. In fact, the Nirvikalpa Samadhi is exactly like the sleep. Only difference is, in deep sleep state, you do not know you are. In Nirvikalpa Samadhi, you know you are. But in Nirvikalpa Samadhi also, you do not know what you are. Understand? Still, Ajnanam is there. Amazing, isn't it? So you practice meditation for so long. Why? You are being aware that you are. Understand? You can put all your thoughts to sleep. You consciously put your thoughts to sleep in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. In deep sleep state, naturally your thoughts are put to sleep. Understand now? Just you are. You are, there is only you are. You are means what? The meditator alone is there. Understand now? You are and no thought is there. No, even not even object of meditation is there. What happened? Resolved. Like what? Like in deep sleep state. But what's the difference here? In deep sleep state, you do not know you are. In Nirvikalpa Samadhi, you know you are. Nothing is there. Therefore, nothing is there means what? It's a non-dual experience. Again, experience. In Savikalpa Samadhi, there's dual experience. In Nirvikalpa Samadhi, there's non-dual experience. Non-dual experience means what? There's nothing other than you. You are. Nothing is there. Whole jagat is resolved. All the thoughts are resolved. Just you are yourself. Just you are. But even then, in Nirvikalpa Samadhi also, Ajnanam continues to be there. Even here, now, the ignorance is there in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Please understand this. There is non-dual experience. That is why these yogis mistake this non-dual experience for enlightenment and mistake it for Jnanam. Moksha. That's not true. This is like how even when all the thoughts are naturally put to sleep, the entire mind is asleep. There's no sukham, there's no dukkham. No, the not having both pain and pleasure is a sukham, isn't it? This is sleepy sukham, temporary sukham, temporary moksha. Every day you fall asleep, temporary freedom. Temporarily you're free. From all limitations, there's no ahankara, there's no ajnana. Understand now, ajnanam is there, but ajnanam of ajnanam also is there. Therefore, there's no worry. There's no worry, no smallness. In sleep, you have sukham. No, why? Because there's no eye-sense. Therefore, eye-sense is not placed on body-mind's complex. There's no adhyasa, there's no adhyaropa, there's no sense of being small. There's no ahankara. So therefore, so no sukham, no dukkham, no desire, no need. At least in sleep, you don't have need. Know that? There's no need, there's no desire. That is why you fall, you're flat also. You're not running around. If you walk again, there's a somnambulism, there's a different problem, isn't it? Sleepwalking is a different problem. That is an entirely different problem. Otherwise, I'm saying, that is why you're able to, the only time you are flat. Otherwise you'll be doing something or the other. That no pressure. Complete total rest. Understand? But you do not know you are. There's no I am. There's no I thought. There's no am thought. Understand now? Nothing. But in Nirvikalpa Samadhi, there is no jagat, there is no desire, there is no anger, there is no greed, there is no hatred, Understand now? Hatefulness, there is nothing, there is no jealousy, there is no anger, there is nothing, no thought, there is no desire, no passion, no attachment, nothing is there like in sleep. But understand now, no object of meditation is there, just you are. But I am, that is. Understand now? There is a difference between Nirvikalpa Samadhi and deep sleep state. I is, I am. That alone is there. But even then, that akhanda akara vritti is not there. I is what? That is not there. Naji is not there. I am. This is what? Non-dual experience. Why? Nothing other than you is. No thought is. Non-dual experience. So Nirvikalpa Samadhi also is only non-dual experience. Any experience should come to an end. So there will be a time you will be disturbed from this experience, like how you wake up from sleep. You are also disturbed from this non-dual experience of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. There is no mokshaha still. How you are so fresh after your sleep, when you wake up from sleep, you are so clear, so calm, you are quiet. You know, always every morning after a good sleep is a very pleasant, desirable time, isn't it? You are so fresh. That is why you are able to grasp and all that. Similarly, whenever you come out of Nirvikalpa Samadhi also, you will be so calm and nice, quiet, everything, but still you are ignorant of the, still there is ignorance of self continues to be there, still there is what? Still bondage is there. Once you come out of this samadhi experience, again ahankara will pop up. Ajnanam is there, adhyasa will be there, adhyarupa will be there, ahankara will be there, still smallness of, you know, this sense of being smallness, centered on I, this will be there. All these problems will continue to be there. Ahankara is not resolved in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Understand? That is why Samadhi is not moksha. That is why Samadhi is not the solution. Samadhi is just the practice to discipline the mind, it is fine. But Samadhi is not mokshaha. Nirvikalpa Samadhi is not moksha enlightenment. But yogis will say this is enlightenment. No. But Vedantins do not accept it. Understand now? This is not moksha. Why? Because ajnanam continues to be there. But the root cause of the whole problem is ajnanam. Nirvikalpa Samadhi. That is why jnanam is, whereas, what is difference here in this, that's why in contemplation, see meditation can result in what? Dhyanam will result in Savikalpa Samadhi. Savikalpa Samadhi, again further made practice of meditation, Savikalpa Samadhi will help you, will result in what? Nirvikalpa Samadhi. That is the objective of yogic practices. Understand? But what is the difference here? Whereas in contemplation, there is self-enquiry. Look at this. Why contemplation will result in ascertained vision of the non-duality of the reality? Samadhi, the meditation will bless you with what? Non-dual experience, but not the vision of the non-duality of the reality. Is it clear now? Non-dual experience is different from being blessed with the vision of the non-duality of the reality. So in contemplation, what happens? You inquire into the meaning, the content, the essence, the core, the hrit of what this I is. You say because I is the all the thoughts, the entire mind, which is a constitution of all the thoughts, are centered on this I thought. So the I thought, if it's enough, if where does one thought come from? Okay, if you know what this thought is all about, where does this, what is this? If it's like asking, you know, if you ask where does this one wave? Okay, you want to know where all this ocean is full of waves, and where does this wave? What is this wave? This form wave, where does it come from? Where does it originate from? And where does it exist? Where does it resolve? Okay, what is it which lends existence to this wave? What is the reality of this wave? Find out. Like that, you just go, take a whole, leave all the entire mind, leave all the thoughts. Why? Because all the thoughts are centered on one thought, I thought. Therefore, just this way, hold on to the I thought. What is this I? I or I am is nothing but thoughts. When you speak it out, it is a shabda word. When you don't speak it out, it is just a thought. I is what? A thought. Am is what? A thought. I am is a thought. Ennam. Nanangrathu ennam da. So where does this thought come from? Where does the thought originate from? Where does this thought, I thought, exist? Where does it resolve? That is the reality. Know that. That is how the reality is available for recognition. And that is why you see, that is what is the content of the I thought. That is what the essence of the I thought. Truth of the I thought. Reality of the I thought. That is the reality of the whole. So what is this? Then you analyze these states of experience and you arrive at it. My God, I is just the thought. I am is a thought. When this thought is there only in waking state, when the thought is there, there is a waking state. Understand now? When the thought is not there, there is no waking state. And all the thoughts are there. And in dream state, just a dream. And the deep sleep state, no thought is there. Naturally, there is all. There is a function. Okay, that is the function within the realm of, there is the function of mentation. All the thoughts resolve naturally every day. Sometime all thoughts resolve. Sometimes the thoughts wake up. Understand how? It's continuous. Like manifesting, resolving. Coming into being, again resolving. Rising, resolving. Rising, resolving. It is constantly this is happening. Like waves come and waves resolve. Waves come and waves resolve. Similarly, thoughts wake up, thoughts arise, thoughts resolve. Waking, deep sleep state. Waking, deep sleep state. In between, sometimes just dream. And all these thoughts. So I also is what a thought. How do we know? Because I also is not there in deep sleep state. Isn't I thought is not there. Am thought is not there. That is why you do not know that you are in deep sleep state. And when you wake up, you know that you did not know that you were in waking deep sleep state. All the thoughts are resolved. And all the thoughts are resolved, what is there? But all thoughts being resolved is known. How do you know that all thoughts are resolved? There is known. How do you know? There is knowledge. That means there is knower. Who is the knower? The knower is not sitting elsewhere away from the thought, okay? The knower is there as the very source of the thought. Who that knower is? A knower is pure knowledge, pure consciousness, pure awareness. Okay? You resolve the knower in pure knowledge. Ezhundhal ennam odungal parambarulna. Rises is a thought. Resolves, it is reality. Look at this. Resolves, a thought resolves, there is reality. The thought rises, reality, rise in reality is thought, resolution of thought is reality. There is no way of knowing it, recognizing the reality, because subtlest. This mind which has to recognize itself is manifestation. That is why you had to use only this methodology. And you know the origin, the source, the existence of the thought. And you focus on that, Swarupam. the reality is understood in terms of Swarupam, you focus attention on that Swarupam in contemplation. There is no distance between the meditator, meditated. The difference is not there. Attention is not focused on elsewhere. Attention is focused on its own Swarupam. Understand? In contemplation. That is why in contemplation results in what? The abiding of the mind in its own Swarupam, having the ascertained doubt-free vision of the reality. So the knowledge, what is I, is in Jnanam. In Nirvikalpa Samadhi, the knowledge what is I is not there. Got the difference between this Nirvikalpa Samadhi and Jnanam? Got the difference now. That is why here, in Nirvikalpa Samadhi, Ahankara cannot be resolved. So Ahankara cause to promise also cannot be resolved. When the experience goes again, it's like once you wake up from sleep, all your problems continue. So from Samadhi come out, maybe the Samadhi person is little evolved and different person, calmer person than ordinary person. That's all. But still he has his own problems. Still there's no moksha. There's no jivan mukti. Whereas in contemplation will result in sthira jnanam, which is jivan mukti. And there in Samadhi, what happens? You really put the thoughts to sleep by constant practice. Focusing, placing the mind on only one object for continuously, not being distracted by any other object, slowly put all thoughts to sleep. Whereas in Jnanam, you do not put the thoughts to sleep. You need not put the thoughts to sleep. You do not squeeze, flatten the thought to see H2O is the reality. Understand now? The wave can be wave, still you can know the reality of the wave is H2O. Similarly here, in Jnanam, you don't need to undo your thoughts. That's such a wrong teaching. Because this, drop your mind along with your shoes. I heard somewhere in a meditation class. You leave your mind along with the shoes outside, what? Who will go and listen to the class? Some people, oh my God, amazing teaching, wonderful. That look at the person's wisdom. He said, along with your shoes, outside is a board, okay? Leave your mind here along with your shoes. If people leave the mind along with the shoes and go inside, who will go inside? Who will go and listen? So drop the mind. You know, kill your mind. Kill your thoughts. Drop your thoughts away. You don't need to... How can you drop? Who's dropping here? No thoughts need to be dropped. Okay? Thoughts need not be dropped. Thoughts cannot be dropped. How can they be dropped? Thoughts cannot be destroyed. Just the thoughts can be as thoughts. But still, the reality of the thoughts being what it is now can be understood. So without resolving the thoughts, without undoing the thoughts, without doing anything with the thoughts, just you can know these thoughts are nothing but the reality, the awareness. That is in Jnanam. Whereas Nirvikalpa Samadhi, you do not know what these thoughts are, but you just put the thoughts to sleep. It's a big difference. Have you got the difference? When you say you need to know the truth of the wave, you discover, okay, the wave rises from H2O, exists in H2O, dissolves in H2O. Once you know that, it is enough. Where the thought, the wave is rising as a wave, or the wave is jumping as a wave, or wave is resolved, you don't need to worry about it. No, to know the truth of the wave being H2O, I need to straighten the wave, flatten the wave. And then I need to undo the wave. Don't know. Not necessary. Is it clear now? So you don't need to do anything. So here the vicharaha, inquiry into the meaning, the content, the essence of the I. I is a thought and what is the content of it? That inquiry is called vicharaha. Atma swarupa vicharaha, swa swarupa anusandhanam. Swarupa vicharaha, or you can say, no, self-analysis. People vichara, inquiry. You inquire into where does it rise from, where does it exist, like that. Then you discover it. Then, this Atma, again vichara, how vichara continues. It is another, Shastram says, all the words Shastram uses, Atma Nityaha, the reality of the whole Jagat, which is the content of I in everything that is here, is the Atma. Understand now? This Nityaha, eternal, but means it has no beginning, it has no end, it has undergo any change. Not only Nityaha, Shuddhaha, it is pure, nothing can pollute, it is free from all blemishes and impurities. What consciousness, when does it begin? Awareness. When does it end? Time itself really exists in awareness. Isn't it? Where is the space? The space exists in awareness. Look at this. The knower is awareness, the known object also abides in awareness, it's awareness. The knowing is awareness. Triputi, all the three are awareness. Three in one. Three has been reduced, resolved in one. Nothing is outside of awareness, really speak. This jnana will come in actually when you really do this inquiry, you will get it. Nothing is outside of awareness. So time is in awareness, space is in awareness, all the objects exist in the realm of time and space is in awareness. Awareness has no beginning, nityaha, no end. It doesn't end. Everything begins and ends in awareness. Space begins and ends in awareness. So shuddhaha, it is pure. What can go and pollute the awareness? But everything is awareness. Isn't any dirt is awareness. Awareness is dirt free from any dirt, any impurities. All the impurities are awareness, but awareness is free from impurities. So nityaha, shuddhaha, buddhaha, and then knowing, knowledge is a sarupam. Illumining is a sarupam of the sun. That is how the sun is. So knowing is sarupam. Reality is the pure knowledge. How the pure knowledge is? You want to look at pure knowledge. How will we look at it? How will you know it? This is the only way to arrive at it, to comprehend it. Know that. The only way you can stumble upon the reality as pure knowledge. Na anyaha pantha vidyate ayanaya. There is no other way. So you tally what Shastram says, you know, sarvagataha, come on, where awareness is not. Ajaha, shuddhaha, na mriyate, na jayate, all the words you study, now you understand, sau satyam, what is not born, what does not die, what object to change, how pervades everything, how it permeates everything. You understand this. This is jnanam. Understand? Whereas nirvikalpa samadhi, the ahankara is not resolved. Is it clear now? That is why your problem for a solution is not there in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. That is why why should we be interested in something what doesn't solve your problem? You can use this as a means. See, Samadhi is good. You can practice meditation. You can have stillness of mind. But Swarupa Vichara is important. Having the Swarupam, see, through Shravanam and Mananam, having understood what Swarupam is, then Vichara itself is enough. No, what I'm saying, here you really recognize the Swarupam.
Yeah.
The experience means, see, there's some practice, some technique through which you have some experience. Isn't it? So any experience has a beginning, so it has to end. That's why Nirvikalpa Samadhi also is a non-dual experience. Because it is experience is non-dual, nothing is there, it is sukham is very nice. As long as you have the experience, it is a very wonderful experience. Because no sukha, no smallness for length of time. As long as you are there in that, like in deep sleep state, you have no dukkham. Because you are not even there. Here you are there, but still you have no essence in the body is complex because it is all resolved. All the objects are resolved, all the thoughts are resolved. Therefore, it's also sukham. It is very, very closely. No, it gives you a big kick. They say people like it, they mistake it for moksha. Because there's no dukkham here. There's no sense of smallness. Like in sleep. The problem of smallness, there's no ahankara here. In the experience. Therefore, ahankara is not, that means there's no desire, no need. No, that smallness. There's no pain. Therefore, sukham. But the problem is, if the experience continues to be there, that's fine. But the experience goes. Because it's experience, it ends. When the experience ends, again you come back to the same old, you wake up to the same old problem. Whereas in jnanam, you are like before, but in here the change is here. Same person, the jnani, ajnani, and through vichara, contemplation, the same person comes and goes around, but the perception is changed. Perception is completely different. That's why cognitive change. Understand now? You don't change anything outside. Here changes everything. That is why people use these nice things. Now they say, when you wear specs and you wear different colors, you change the color, you know, and you see differently. Whatever color you put on, and you see the same color outside. So here you have the vision of the non-duality of the reality. Then you see the whole jagat is that reality. It's all an understanding, isn't it? It's not experience. It is not experience. Is it clear now? It is recognition. It is ascertainment. It is ascertained doubt-free knowledge. Okay, we'll stop here. Have a cup of tea and come back. We'll continue. I didn't even do the slokams today.